You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And you're with me here for the next 45 minutes, 50 minutes or so, chatting away about things pertinent to Colombia and, of course, Colombians. And then those of you out there interested in Colombia, traveling to this newly fashionable destination, and, of course, learning a little bit more about Colombia, perhaps than not in the mainstream press. That's why we're here. That's why 7,000 plus of you download this show. And to you, and to those of you who do so, I am eternally grateful, because it gives me the strength to continue, but looking for the people to interview and finding out about more things about Colombia. And of course, this is good for me as a journalist as well. So thank you, all of you out there. How did you find last week's show with Barry Max Wills? Quite a storyteller, no? Anyway, I was thrilled to have him on the show. But this week we have Charlotte McKenzie, who's a journalist from the UK, graduate of Bristol University. And we'll be talking about her master's thesis and a little bit about her time here in Colombia. And it's very interesting indeed, because it's, you know, the master's thesis is about the fiestas, ferias, carnavales, and all sorts of celebrations in Colombia. So this is something we haven't actually really addressed here on Columbia Calling, so it's quite cool. And of course, it will be an academic study of these things, not just like, oh, it was a whiskey soaked event, or it was a Aguila sponsored event and I got crazy. No, we'll be talking a little bit more about the crux and what is behind the carnavales, but what is behind the ferias, fiestas, and so on here in Colombia. So very exciting show for you in the pipeline coming up in the second segment of this show. What's been going on in Colombia? Well, you know, the whole country has stopped. It's paralyzed due to the Copa America. And of course, last weekend was Father's Day too. So, I mean, the only date more important in the calendar than Father's Day, perhaps in Colombia, is Mother's Day. Anyway, so Father's Day, everybody's out and about. And of course, the match. I won't talk about the match, Colombia-Peru, but let's talk about the previous one. Colombia beat Brazil. First time in competitive football in 24 years. It was a ill-tempered end to the game. Neymar, Ampon, I think you could say, headbutted Baka. Baka was also looking for it. So they both got red cards, and Neymar is out for the rest of the Copa America. But anyway, Colombia went crazy. It was a self-entitled, self-indulgent Brazil side. This is not the Brazil of greats. This is a very average Brazil side. And of course, it's a Brazil side run by Dunga, so we know what kind it is. Rather than talk about that anymore, I did think that more important than the Copa America this last week, of course, has been the incessant attacks on infrastructure by the FARC guerrillas. We're talking about the pipelines in Tumaco, pipelines in Arauca, pipelines in Putumayo. So we're talking about, serious environmental damage. Of course, hundreds of thousands of people affected, not only by the pollution, the contamination of the rivers, by, oil spills, but also without power. There have been attacks on pylons. From what I've read, the FARC were trying to attack, an energy sort of outlet point for Bogota, so someone that provided Bogota with energy. So it's their push to try and force, strong arm the government into a bilateral ceasefire. Now we're all in favour of a bilateral ceasefire, but under the right considerations, under the right conditions. The FARC cannot be engaged in a bilateral ceasefire if they don't stop, let's say, transporting drugs, exploding, murdering, attacking, and doing whatever they're doing. It just can't happen. And the long, weary Colombian public, I do believe that is the litmus test, feel the same. So the government of President Wamama Santos is still holding out. We'll have a change of the Minister for Defense soon, so we'll see how that goes. Possibly because you're moving Juan Carlos Pinzon into the wings to become a possible presidential candidate in a couple of years. So very interesting times here in Colombia. Anyway, so that's really about it for me to talking outright to the rest of you. And we're going to sign off now so that we can come back with Charlotte McKenzie and talk about fiestas and ferias in Colombia. Of course, always get in touch, ColombiaCalling@gmail.com, ColombiaCallingRadio.com, Twitter and Facebook as well. Love to hear from you guys. Thank you for listening, and we'll come right back with the interview of the week. Thank you again. Bye-bye. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're here in Bogota. We have a special guest. Like every week, we have a special guest. This week, we have Charlotte McKenzie, a Briton from Oxford in the UK, who is a Latin American file, I guess you are, or a Colombia file, definitely. She's a journalist. She's written for a variety of publications, so we've got some good editorial content ahead of us. But she also did something very interesting. It was her master's thesis on Colombian festivals. Yeah. Is that right?
Colombian festival tourism.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, Charlotte.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit how you came to be in Colombia.
How I came to be in Colombia is quite convoluted, but I'll try and keep it brief. I did my year abroad when I studied languages at Bristol in Ibagué.
Yeah.
Which isn't about, it's hot and there's lots of swimming pools and, there's worse places to be for 6 months. And then I decided that when I went home and finished, that I wanted to carry on being a perpetual student.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, I've always had this kind of interest in Colombian folklore. And I then decided that I wanted to look at, for my master's project, festivals and their relation to Colombian culture.
Uh-huh.
So then I was very fortunate to win a travel grant, came back to Colombia, did lots of travelling around for this project, went back home again, tried in vain to get a job, didn't happen. And then I got offered a job, first of all, as an interpreter, so I came over to do that. And then I had a bit of a break about 7 months ago and got offered a new job doing work for Business News Americas, which is what I really would like to do, and that, in a nutshell, is how I ended up where I am.
You've summed it all up in just over a minute.
Oh, cool. That was good.
I think you kept it brief. I think it's excellent. Now, first of all, I think most of our listeners would be kind of confused why Bristol University had an affiliation with Ibagué, Tolima.
Yes, that's right.
And why Ibagué? Because it's not. I wouldn't even class it as an intermediary city. I'd class it as smaller than an intermediary city.
I'm not entirely sure why. When I went, their link no longer exists, but it was this kind of 20-year-long link. Mm. I think someone had been and decided that because it was, it's quite close to Bogota, it's safe, it's quite a small town, that they would then establish this link with Bristol and then, that's and how I ended up in Bristol.
Colombian City of Music.
Colombian Capital of Music.
That's right. Were you there for all the choral
for San Juan
events?
And San Pedro? Yeah. No, that's in June, unfortunately.
So you weren't even there for what was worth being there for?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. But if someone was to go to Ibagué and the Tolima area around there, what would you recommend to them? Because, again, we don't talk about this a lot on this show.
Sure. Outside of Ibagué, there's a really interesting, there's quite a small town called Juntas.
Uh-huh.
And you can go, I'm not sure now if they've closed it, because I think they had some slight problem with the gorilla after saying it was safe. But you can go and there's thermal hot springs, uh-huh, and it's very green. And Juntas is a really interesting area as well, because I think it's on a fault line, so that every few years, when they have quakes and stuff, they all have to rebuild their houses. Outside of Ibagué itself, it's great, there's loads of waterfalls and it's quite green, and then there's obviously loads of really small towns in Tolima where you can go and have a look.
Mm-hmm.
Onda's close by, Espinal.
Mm-hmm.
It's very close to the Tatacoa Desert, isn't it?
Which, it's not far at all, because you head straight down the highway. And so you're close to
it. Yeah, it's quite good.
It's got to be a good experience, though. I mean, because you're going somewhere that really there are going to be very few English speakers. So, it's a benefit to you as a student learning Spanish.
To be there. No, I definitely agree with that.
Okay, very good. Ibagué, I have been to Ibagué.
Well, there we go.
So, and it is the town is, again, I'd say nothing to speak of at all. It would be, an equivalent to me would probably be
Swindon.
I've been to Swindon. and I've got lost on the magic roundabout.
Oh, well, there you go. I compare it to Swindon.
Well, yeah, I would say it's nicer than Swindon, with all due respect to Swindoners out there, in that it's got that beautiful countryside around
it. Yeah,
sure. Swindon's got some nice countryside.
Swindon's got Wiltshire.
Yeah, which is very beautiful,
you know,
too.
So there we go.
Oh, well, there we go. Swindon and Ibage twinned forever on this show.
Forever.
Okay, very good. No, I think it's a good thing to do, rather than, you know, like, for example, when Latino students come over and they kind of study, and they're always in London, and they just fall into a Latino community.
Yeah, sure.
Whereas, you know, going to Ibagué as an English speaker, you were going to have to speak Spanish. So there we go. It's a good plan for everyone thinking of going. And then, so Bristol have ended their relationship with Ibagué, and where have they started up with, do you know?
I'm not sure.
Or have they left Colombia?
I don't think they've left Colombia. The last thing I heard when people contacted me trying to work out how to come to Colombia was either they were opting to, you know, do a semester in Los Andes, which would be fascinating and great, but obviously quite expensive.
Yes.
Or British Council, of course.
Okay, of course.
So,
British,
you know,
Council.
there's always opportunities for students to kind of look down those routes as well. Or then, you know, multinationals who might want to take someone on for a couple of weeks, months.
Yeah, yeah. I did my year abroad in Guatemala.
There we go. So that's good.
Yeah, it was fun too. I couldn't exactly say it was safe. but it was a lot of fun back. God, it was 1998, 1999.
Oh, wow.
So a few years ago now.
Yeah.
A few years ago now. I think the situation actually worsened there. But never mind. Let's move on from that subject. You're in Ibagué. Anyway, I want to talk about your master's thesis because I think it's very interesting. This, you know, so what the, tell us the title again.
Sure. And the title was The Influence of. It was looking at the influence of tourism on Colombian folklore festivals.
And you took three.
I took three festivals. That was quite a hard decision to make, but in the end it just kind of worked out as geographically what was sort of easier. So I went to a really small town called Cienega, which is about 10 minutes away from Santa Marta.
Gabriel García Márquez town.
Famous for the banana massacre, which has this festival called El Caimán, Festival del Caimán Cieneguero. And then I also then went on to Valledupar, which is famous for Vallenato music.
Yeah.
And looked at their Festival de la Leyenda Vallenata.
Mm-hmm.
I missed the festival, unfortunately, because I would have quite liked to have gone, but they were very helpful.
A whiskey-soaked event.
Oh, really?
I went my first year, 2007. I'm not a fan of Vallenata.
But you were by the end of it?
No. It really, really just convinced me I really wasn't ever going to be a fan of Vallenato. There are competitions of who can play the accordion the fastest.
Oh, wow.
You see, now the accordion I like in a French sense.
Yeah, sure.
Slow, kind of laconic.
Atmospheric, I don't like this, cafe.
This kind of carnival-esque accordion.
Oh, wow.
I don't like the Vallenato. And then to hear the competition of who can play fastest is even worse.
Oh, God.
But the festival itself actually is well worth going to,
right? Yeah.
It really is, and everybody's in a good mood. I think they're always full drunk the whole time.
Off their faces, probably.
And I met some very good contacts, and it was very interesting. But anyway, you missed it, but they were good for you.
They were good.
Did you meet some of the top families there? They talk about it?
I went to a couple of the Bayonetta schools.
Okay, very cool.
Which was really cool, very interesting.
Yeah.
Amazingly talented, very small children playing really large instruments. But I mean, it was great. Like, I mean, that for me was that was what made Valledupar. Those kind of experiences. And just people being incredibly helpful and welcoming and really open to, you know, questions and help, you know, just happy to help and receive you. And so if you haven't been to Valledupar, I'd recommend you go.
But during that period. And did you get to travel around Valledupar a bit?
Yes.
Up to La Mina and other places?
Up to Nabusimaki.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Nabusimaki, because I've never been.
Oh, have you not?
No.
Nabusimaki, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, doesn't it mean something like land of the right sun? Something to do with sun?
Yeah, I think so.
So it's quite a large Arhuaco indigenous settlement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a bit of a weird setup because when we went, what happened was you have to kind of ask permission to by the mammals to see if they'll let you into there, because you know their town is walled.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't grant us permission, so we spent a lot of time walking around and trying to stare into the town, peering. But no, it's fascinating. I mean, it's very untouched. There's, you know, like, it's like, you know, if you go to Cabo de la Vela, you know, there's generators for electricity between certain hours of the day. You know, there's no electric. You know, it's completely isolated, you know, so beyond anywhere I've experienced. But it's, and it's a very bumpy and quite arduous task to get there, but it's totally worth it. Like, I really,
it's almost like a protected, almost, I wouldn't say reservation because it hasn't been declared,
but it's
a protected area for the indigenous
people.
And they're very protective of it
themselves.
Super
protective, yeah.
What I've heard is that they're going to limit tourism and keep limiting it. They're going to keep creating sort of rings,
around
not physical rings, but just sort of like on the map of how far people can come without permission and things, because they want to preserve their culture.
Sure.
And this brings me onto a nice topic, because I think it's very interesting about the fiestas and festivals in Colombia. Of course, they come from or pagan or religious or indigenous or African or whatever. They come from all of these backgrounds, but a lot of them are losing that authenticity a bit. And I think you studied that because of the sponsorship and so on. So maybe share with us a little bit about that.
So first of all, when looking in, you know, into kind of festival tourism, it's really interesting to note here in Colombia that you have a fiesta, a festival, and a carnaval, which I think I mentioned to you earlier. So a carnaval, for example, is like Pasto, Blancos y Negros, or Barranquilla, which obviously are more well-known, documented, you know, more likely to attract European tourism. A fiesta, Colombia has millions and thousands of millions of fiestas. There's like, you know, the fiesta of Sancocho or the mango or, you know, the sombrero volteado. And then a festival is kind of slightly larger. It might attract not just the people from that town, but people from surrounding towns. So when I was looking at, when I started this whole arduous academic journey, I had to kind of look into which ones I was going to look at. So obviously, Cienegia being the, you know, main experience that I wrote about, I thought that, you know, I would turn up and there might be some other sort of lost looking Europeans. No, just me. I was very lucky. I managed to stay with a friend's family who had like a sort of beach house, which was pretty cushy. But, you know, the whole kind of tourism market, as it were, was sort of more centered around people, you know, merchant vendors even, who sort of go around all the festivals. So they do like what I would love to do, the entire kind of national circuit, selling hats and plastic toys and goodness knows what, you know, whistles, etc. So that was very interesting, because it wasn't at all what I'd kind of thought when I was looking at, you know, where to begin this whole thing in England. Another aspect of festival tourism is now, as you've mentioned, especially with Barranquilla, they're really tapping into the sponsorship market. So it was really interesting to see that, you know, Bavaria, that's kind of Colombian national beer, and then I think it was some random brand of Aguardiente were sponsoring this festival. So obviously I took loads of pictures to look at this, and all the pictures you can just see, quite sadly, just emblazoned everywhere is all this, you know, quite gaudy colours and sponsorship. Interestingly, I think in Barranquilla they've kind of introduced a ruling so that you can't wear the, you know, the sort of festival, the sponsorship paraphernalia on the costumes that people use.
Oh, really?
Because they want to, you know, still keep it separate.
Yeah.
And then and the main thing that really I found really fascinating was that I was obviously the only gringo there, which, you know, was a really bizarre experience.
It's bizarre, because in truth these are attractive moments for a tourist to see something authentic and cultural.
It's super authentic, exactly.
I know that I've only spent like a day of the Barranquilla carnival, like the first day or second day or something like that. I had to pass through. And I did know, I spent a lot of time in Rio de Janeiro and being there and stuff, but it, you know, the Barranquilla one is much truer to its roots than Rio's,
definitely,
for example. And that's what, so I, hearing that they're not putting the sponsorship on their costumes is a very positive move.
I think it is a positive move, and I think also what's interesting as well is that Colombia very recently has sort of launched this kind of cultural heritage classification system, if you will. It's a bit long-winded. So they started to look at certain aspects of Colombian culture, and they, you know, they've listed them and they're now protected. So, for example, under this Patrimonio Cultural scheme, they've said, okay, Carnaval de Barranquilla, we recognise that. That's a UNESCO carnival, but we're going to protect it.
Yeah.
These are the rules and regulations we have to abide by before each year launching this year's version of the carnival. Yeah. Pasto Carnaval Blancos y Negros, that's UNESCO as well, I believe. So then they have to adhere to these guidelines. So then you kind of, you know, various things. One, it's interesting how they then, you know, is it because it's UNESCO that it's got this classification? What warrants it? You know, is it the size? Is it the money? Is it really, you know, is it political links? You know, government links? You could kind of speculate. And then two, what about all these festivals that are left who aren't then, and, you know, protected? You know, they're going to, like, you know, I would like to see what San Diego would look like in 5 years. Is it going to just be a complete gaudy sort of fairground and lose the traditional aspect? Because what's so nice about that festival is it's small. It's, you know, it attracted kind of a few people from surrounding towns that I stumbled across.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's very traditional. So it's traditional. The whole idea is that it's based around this dance. So the whole idea is that little, I can't remember, Juanita, goes to the river with her brother and then comes back and he's been eaten by the caiman. So the whole thing is then, you know, recreating this dance as a guy in a polystyrene crocodile, you know, or whatever. And what I thought was really interesting as well is, it touched kind of all, you know, everyone was included. It was a very inclusive festival. So they had kids from a fundación with learning difficulties taking part. They had the cross-dressing, you know, representation, which I thought was fantastic, and they were great. So it was something that, you know, you wouldn't kind of expect to see maybe in a town that might be, you would think, conservative and quite closed off, really, because it's, you know, Cienega is a small town. It's obviously still quite embittered that Santa Marta got the international airport, you know, because if they'd had the airport, that would have really changed things. Drum and Coal, you know, it's kind of not done as well as the sort of its sister town, Santa Marta, up the coast. So I think it was a really interesting place to be and kind of experience the festival and people's just mindsets.
Truly fascinating stuff. I mean, we're going to talk more about this in the next segment of the show because there's so much to talk about. And clearly you are an expert. Don't laugh about it. I mean, you've got the academic background to it. You know what you're talking about. So we're going to take a short break. We're talking to Charlotte McKenzie and we'll be right back. This is Columbia Calling and I'm Richard McCall. Don't go away. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're here with Charlotte McKenzie. We've been talking about her master's thesis on festivals and ferias and fiestas, but there's a difference between all of these things, which was established in the last section, so I won't go back into it. But I find it interesting that you chose Cienega Grande, because it's not a town that's visited at all. And of course, you've spent some time there. I went there on a press trip years and years ago.
Oh, wow.
Because we were doing a Ruta Garcia Marquiana with Pro Columbia now,
yeah,
it's pro-export.
And
so, of course, it was Cartagena and Aracataca, so where Garcia Marquez was from. But Cienega I found the most interesting, because there was no one there, and just learning about Gabriel Garcia Marquez selling books in the plaza there. That's what he used to sell books before he'd even published books. And before as a journalist, he sold books, you know, as a regular bookseller in the main plaza. And it's just one of those overlooked places that could possibly tap into the tourism market a bit more. Not... it wouldn't be massive because it's overshadowed by Santa Marta on one side and Cartagena and Barranquilla on the other side and stuff. But it's something it could tap in. It is, you know, there could be something cultural that could draw in a few more.
I think
I think that's interesting here in Colombia, because I think that's part of the drive. And I think you mentioned it in this sort of patrimonio nacional, sort of national heritage type thing. I think that's what they're trying to do. They label it. And then, of course, it gets the legal protection, and so it has to go through various forms, which is kind of a relief in some things, because you get, like you said, the smallest feria and fiesta for the mango or for, you know, for the potato or something like that, or for the leek,
the chicken, or
things are a bit more darker up there in San Antero, the donkey festival and stuff.
Very
and,
weird.
You know, and I'm sure you had to look into all of these things. But I like the fact that there's a protection coming on, because... although, you know, things will get left aside, like you said, there's a danger, and in particular in a town like Mompos, like where I have my place, and everybody knows about that, but there's a danger that a festival just gets taken over by some guy with the biggest pick-up, you know, the King Kong speakers, blasting out champeta, reggaeton, or vallenato with so much interference that it's no longer a fiat festival.
Sure.
It's just like a drinking party.
Yeah.
You know, so... which... you know, has its place and its time and everything. It's part of Colombia and especially part of the coast and everything of this. But at the end of it, can we protect these things from that? I mean, it's difficult, isn't it?
It's very difficult.
Because, you know, it's part of the spirit as well, is that, you know, when Carnival is on in Barranquilla, the whole coast stops.
Yeah.
Not just Barranquilla. Nobody goes to school. Everyone's throwing flour at maicena. Everyone's drinking, well, past a certain age, everyone's drinking,
illegally
drinking and so on. So it's hard to know where the line is drawn, really, on the sort of, let's say, the legitimate and not so legitimate places. So I don't know, when you were investigating, I mean, you say geographically, of course, Barranquilla, Cienega and Valle del Pardo makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense, that triangle
that's
there.
A small triangle.
But did you look into other places as well, perhaps?
I did. I almost I was in Ibagué when I started off on this magical tour. And I did speak to a couple of, you know, organisers mm-hmm. of their you know, San Juan and San Pedro and another. They obviously, Ibagué being the musical capital, has a very well known music conservatory.
Yes.
So they were going to, I think they were launching a classical music festival.
Yes. I think so.
So I met one of their organisers, and I think with, you know, festivals, what, I've lost my train of thought.
That's okay.
What were we talking about?
The festivals, if you investigate others.
Oh yeah, sorry. So I think, you know, I think it would be interesting to see if there was some way of then, you know, classifying them and protecting them, because obviously, you know, Ibagué, as well as that, well, neighbour, there's Bambuco, Huila, all that area of Colombia, that sort of corridor down towards Ecuador is filled with music and festivals.
Yeah.
But I think as well, the main thing that I found was that, you know, I'm sat in rainy England looking into stuff. Where does one start, as it were? You know, I went to the British Library, tried to kind of feel a bit inspired, drank a lot of coffee, of course, you know, standard student behaviour.
Yeah.
So I think what I found that was very interesting as well is that you can Google festivals and, you know, you can find Barranquilla and all the, you know, the larger festivals will pop up, the theatre festival, of course, here in Bogota, Rock al Parque, you know, but then that's that thing of, okay, Rock al Parque, is that a festival? It's classed as a festival, but it's like a two-day concert.
It's a two-day concert.
And then, you know, obviously festivals that don't have all this sponsorship don't appear on the internet. So I was very lucky because I found Cienega through contacting an academic who was from the university in Barranquilla, who then said, oh, you're looking at this region of Colombia, here are some festivals, you're in luck. So that was, you know, it's just because they're not sort of on any sort of, it's all, and that's the thing as well, is it's all very, almost a cult in a weird way, because then I went to Aracataca thinking I'd been told by a musician that this weekend was going to be the festival of tamboras. Turned up there, no festival, of course. No one had ever heard of this festival, you know, the, what festival are you talking about, kind of thing.
You had your Macondo experience.
So, you know, it's that thing of that there are all these festivals here, but if there was some kind of larger national body who could kind of classify them or recognise them, make sure that that information was there, so then obviously then there would be a wider sort of tourist net and maybe more international tourists would perhaps want to go. But I think, you know, unless there is sort of some incentive, like, you know, the Hay Festival in Cartagena, or you want to go to Barranquilla to have that authentic experience. And maybe as a Western tourist, you would feel sort of safety in numbers to a certain extent, because there's still petty crime, it's still maybe a bit dodgy, you know, that you could lose your bag. Obviously that could happen anywhere, I'm just giving you a sort of off the cuff example. But I think that is what really struck me, is that there just isn't really a sort of awareness of how to properly sort of manage and structure things at a national level, and probably because that is too difficult, and as we mentioned before, there are so many festivals and fiestas and goodness knows what, that where would you start?
I think there's one every day.
Yeah,
at least a couple every week. I mean, that's not an exaggeration. And
no.
where do you come down then on, you know, Reinados, are those
of
festivals?
Course,
I mean, Reinados, like I'm saying, are kind of beauty pageant.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the big one in Cartagena, of course, which I have attended, which was a peculiar day, which I never ended up writing about because I was going to be too acid.
Oh, dear.
I mean, the whole thing about, you know, everyone being a prepago, or everyone being a narco's girlfriend, or anything. It became too much for
too
me.
Sticky.
It was horrible. And the swimsuit competition was just one of those things. It was like people like throwing dollars around.
Oh, no.
It's just one of these. It is. I'm quite sensitive to these sort of things because I'm observing everything. And I'm saying, good God. Anyway, but you know, and I know that there's like the you know, there's Miss cattle ranching in Cordoba, in Monteria, and there's the Miss Petrol in Barranca Bermeja.
Oh,
and things for everywhere. But does that come down in a festival? I don't know. Does it come down as a ferry, or does it come down as a beauty pa-? But, you know, these things are, I mean, it's kind of fascinating, really.
It is fascinating. And then also there's the difference, I suppose, as well, in this classification system. Where would you start? Because when I went to Villa Vicente for a weekend, stumbled across, I think it's called a colau.
With the
bull and
pulling its tail.
You know, and that obviously is is what huge you would, down there. You know, it's huge down there. It's a festival, but then
Corneo,
that's it. Yeah. But then, could you then, you know, considering international kind of animal, human, not human rights, animal, you know, rights, and all these organisations at home, you know, if you then wanted to protect this festival, you're going to get met by this wave of criticism from across the Atlantic, you know. So there, it's just these kind of little nuances and little things that slip through the net that mean that it's great, but is it physically possible? And then also, as I think I mentioned to you before, I mean, it was fantastic, and I was very lucky with all these people I contacted and setting up all these interviews, etc., as doing it as a foreign student. But then I mentioned to you, this was 2 years ago, you know, it would be fascinating to do it now, and be fascinating to see if someone from Colombia this end, you know, took it upon themselves to carry on, would they be have the same reception? I mean, I got VIP treatment half the time, I got given the amount of presents and CDs and posters and, you know, all this amazing stuff, which I lugged all back to, you know, Bristol with me, which was fascinating, and it was great, and it made, you know, really meant something. But if I was a Colombian student doing this and I didn't have that money behind me, you know, would it be a project that I could do? And then it's, you know, it just, that's what it all boils down to, really. It's because, as I mentioned, there isn't this kind of network, or it's just contacting, you know, random academics or random people who are involved in musicians, academics, you know, the tourist board, all these kind of entities that, they all exist, but they don't really touch, you know, they're not really linked.
And it's not like a central body that can give you the full information that you could need.
Of course. I mean, what I could kind of think of in the UK comparably, I guess, off the top of my head, is like the National Trust, maybe. Yeah. You know, because we have that in the United Kingdom. Obviously, we're a lot smaller. Mm. But, you know, that, you know, recognises and protects things. And that, sadly, is kind of the difference here. And what I kind of noted when I wrapped this whole thing up was that, without these kind of guidelines and things, it makes, obviously, in all senses, it makes life a lot difficult, more difficult, you know.
I come back to this element on this show quite a lot, as foreigners, we do get a preferential treatment because we're still a novelty.
Sure.
You know, and especially if you're investigating something that's perhaps not so investigated.
No, exactly.
The Hombre Caiman in Cienega is, of course, not. And they're going to open their arms to you.
Yeah, I mean, quite.
And Valledupar wants to grow touristically. They've itemized that as one of their big growth things. Carnaval de Barranquilla is out of control now, of course, for visitors and prices to visit it. But it's one of those things, and it makes me think, you know, when I was received some Colombian guests in my hotel, and they'd just been to another place that was owned by a Canadian on the beach, and they just went, why haven't Colombians done this? And it's because my basic thing is, you know, the country's been so closed internally as well as externally. You couldn't travel around, you only ever went really where your family was. So you go, okay, so we're going out to the weekend to the finca, the family finca, with all of the family, or we're going out, you know, people from the Eje Cafetero would go back for holidays there. It's not about exploring the country, but in recent years now there has been an exploration of the country where they get in the cars with the abuela, the suegra, the cousins, the dog, and just about everything else, and do drive around the countryside. So hopefully there is a move towards this recognition.
I hope so. Yeah. I think as well, just what you mentioned reminded me, you know, Cienega, obviously it's famed for this Marquez link, but then I think in the 80s and 90s, you know, you couldn't go to that region just because it was so guerrilla, paramilitary, you know, rife and controlled. And I remember when I was actually staying there, I was having a long chat with one of the gentlemen who owns, you know, the guy whose house I was staying in. He was saying, you know, Cienega is what we term here in Colombia, kind of Pueblo Chico and Fierno Grande, like, you know, small town.
That's what we say for Montpós.
Hellhole.
As well.
Which, and then he sort of commented, you know, oh, well, I don't think, you know, Europeans, you're generally known as being, you know, more, you know, cultured, and you won't want to come to this festival because why would you come here? Because there's not, you know, it's not culture. It's not what you would class as culture.
But it is.
Exactly. And I think as well, I then met this other kind of self-styled academic guy who was he was a real character, actually. He wouldn't let me record him, and then kept coming up with these pearls of wisdom, which I kept trying to scribble down while being, you know, having aguardiente thrust at me and biscuits with prawns, and, oh God, it was a bit mad, but it was all part of the fun. Yeah. And he was saying, you know, that what he sort of thought and felt was that for the local, the mayor, the political kind of sphere, they use the festival as kind of like a sort of umbrella term to then, you know, shady kind of political links and gatherings and all that kind of stuff. So that as well could have opened up a whole can of worms in relation to corruption claims and things. So I think, you know, as you mentioned, people here in Colombia are starting to be more aware of national tourism. But I think the thing is, you know, with companies like Avianca, well, just product placement, but, you know, Avianca or cheaper national airlines as well, offering flights to Miami, and now obviously, you know, Schengen and all that stuff has opened. If you're a Colombian, you're much more likely to want to, I feel, leave the country and see a bit more of the world than just go and see your gran in Piper or something.
If it costs me $200 to fly to Pasto or $200 to fly to Miami,
you're
going to
want
Colombia,
to go to
Miami. I'm going to go
out
there. It's the truth. And you know, probably got family there too. but it is the truth. And then this political thing is tough because when we have. We have Semana Santa, it's a big celebration across Colombia, but Mompox is very well known for it. But what does the politician do? The mayor in charge, he puts on a big concert the last night of it. And it's for the towns nearby, and it's a vote-winning thing. So he gets a popular singer. This last year was Silvestre Dangond. Last year or the year before. But it's all a display of sort of vulgarity as well, because it's out in the stadium, so, you know, fortunately, you know, the rest of the town empties out and I'm alone because I'm not going to the concert. And Silvestre Dangond, you know, flies over in his helicopter throwing, you know, 50,000 peso bills out and stuff. And
that sounds horrendous.
But it's a political thing, and all of it is charged to the town, and it comes out of public funds, you know, despite trying to win it. And so it's a bit sad.
It's definitely sad.
This thing. I find it very difficult that. And now we've got at the moment, the Mompox Jazz Festival, which is new a couple of years ago, and it's the brainchild of the current governor, Gossain. And this year, this is his final year, so it's going to be a huge blowout.
Oh, wow.
And we know that the guy who's running for his position is coming too, you know, his protege.
Sure.
We know that he's coming too, and he's going to sort of try and take the mantle on the strength of that,
wow.
You know.
So yeah, sure.
It tarnishes it a bit, I would say.
It's all very Marquez-esque.
Well, that's it, isn't it? I mean, we'll say it at the end. But, I mean, we can talk about that for hours, in the truth of it. But I remember when the Oxford Street lights, Christmas lights, were sponsored that one year by Tango.
Oh, wow.
And so the whole Christmas lights had Tango written over it. And it was so horrible that I'm sure everybody in London complained that they've had sponsorship before, but they can't be in the lights now.
Sure.
Can only be down low.
Oh, subtle.
So it can only be subtle, but before it was actually Orange Tango was written above, you know. So it's like having... if we were in Colombia, I guess it would be like Orange Postobon or something. I think we need to move away from it. There needs to be a sort of protection of these sacred, authentic things.
But anyway,
I think it's funny. I think we'll move on a subject here. Now, you and I have been in conversation since a couple of years ago when you wrote to me out of the blue, with a nice email saying, how to become a journalist. But I have to say, I wrote you an incredibly honest email back. I don't have it on template. I write every email personally and stuff. I try to reply to everyone. And I said, you know, it's very difficult unless you do get a job, et cetera, et cetera. But as you said in the first segment, you fell into it after interpreting.
Yeah.
You're 7 months later or so. You are now the correspondent in Colombia for Business News International.
Business News America.
Business News America.
That's right, yeah.
So you are the person, and your byline is there, Charlotte McKenzie, on all of the pieces. If people want to look you up, they can look up.
They can. I always find it quite amusing, as I normally say, I miss Colombia and miss Venezuela as well.
Oh, very good.
So there we go. You can find it on the internet, and it's a subscription only, but normally you can glean a few bits of the article.
Like the first paragraph
with my name. That was fantastic. It was one of these things that my gran always reminds me how when I was little I'd go on about wanting to be a writer, you know, and then I studied languages. And I don't know, I think when you study something and then you really think you're going to finish all this academia and really want to do what you've studied, when you actually are there doing it and then it's not what I envisioned it to be, was a bit disappointing. I mean, I'm very much a language kind of person, not just every day, but also, you know, studying where the roots of words, you know, all that kind of stuff I find really interesting as well. Regionalisms and all that sort of thing. So to then, I think I just felt so disenchanted. And then I was, when I was doing my master's as well, I kind of fell into doing some work for a couple of publications in the UK, more on the music, obviously, festival side of things. So I was doing a lot of voluntary writing. And then just through one of my very good friends here now in Bogota, I was kind of the wild card and went for the job out of the blue, and they obviously thought that they saw something. So they've given me the job. I mean, I think, as we were chatting about earlier, you know, the oil and gas sector, especially at the moment, is really topical. And then the whole, you know, the fact that the peso versus dollar exchange rate is dire, and just sort of things, you know, in Colombia especially, is this, the peace process, you know, which I know everyone bounces around the term, the FARC and the peace process, but it is just something that's still, you know, hasn't been resolved. And I think as well, I feel incredibly lucky being a journalist here, because, you know, you're working and breathing and existing in a country where, in effect, you know, there is a civil war, but everyone just cracks on with things, you know. And I think living in Bogota, we are so removed from the remote areas where all this stuff is kicking off. And it does feel, I think, a bit weird or disjointed at times to be sat, you know, having my coffee and my boiled eggs in the morning, watching TV and seeing, oh, you know, several hours away, something's been blown up or someone's been killed or someone's been kidnapped. But I think that is just the kind of rich tapestry, I suppose, and obviously what attracts, which keeps attracting us foreigners to come here and live and work and try and, you know, make a carbon niche for ourselves in this market.
But yeah, it's just got to be fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, cutting your teeth in this thing, sort of thing, and writing about the peace dialogues and writing about the issues in the oil and gas thing. These are really important things which aren't, you know, let's say mainstream media does not cover. You know, it's down to specialist media now,
I
really.
I think so, and I agree with you there as well. Especially, I find covering Venezuela absolutely fascinating. You know, I mean, I could chat for hours, but you know, I think it is. I was back in the UK recently for about 5 weeks, and I was sat, you know, chatting to some friends. I met someone from the Venezuelan embassy, you know, and it was really fascinating to see, you know, just the lack of sort of awareness in the UK about what's going on, rationing, you know, the fuel situation. It just boggles my mind.
Someone from the Venezuelan embassy in the UK would be a Chavista then, but it'd be placed there, because their embassy's right there by the French embassy and all that.
He was a very interesting character.
Because I've done some negotiating with some Chavista tour agencies want to do a Bolivariano route. We were sitting there. This was a couple of years ago. We were sitting there and doing our pitch, and then it just occurred to me, these are Chavistas. And I just got out one photo that says, you know, si debo mi vida Caracas.
Oh, wow, amazing.
They were like Gloria Mompos, and they were like, could you send me a copy of this photo? But it's true, but it's fascinating, that side of things. And you know, I could sit down with friends and they wouldn't know. You know,
and I think that thing as well, what you just touched on, the whole Simon Bolivar, especially in Latin America, is fascinating because, you know, like Mompos, like where your hostel is based, obviously, isn't there the tenuous link that you slept in the bed in the museum for one night, now it's a museum?
It's like 10 little places where you slept for a night. But all of Colombia.
Yeah, I mean, basically.
It's all of Colombia. Really, you slept somewhere. I mean, it's like...
And obviously the link, you know, in Venezuela, just... I believe it was under Chavez where he kept exhuming remains and then building temples. And
well,
then
he was going to find out
things.
If the CIA had poisoned him. You know, even back then, it was about whether he'd been poisoned or not. They didn't want to know. Chavez exhumed Simón Bolívar from the great pantheon there in Caracas
to see if he'd been
poisoned rather than dying of tuberculosis.
He was quite rigid with lots of stuff. He in his last few months.
I've got some letters of Bolívar's that I found that I bought in a second-hand store there, you know, second hand stall down on the street.
And the
guy had no idea. They're not physical ones, it's just like books.
Yeah.
Of them. And one of them was given, you know, it's got an autograph of a Venezuelan ambassador to the US. Anyway, I flicked through to find all the references to Mompos, and there's someone complaining that the people don't work there. And Bolivar responds that, that's in keeping with their type. So, you know, he knew what was going on, even before it was going on. So, anyway, I think we've had two or three shows shows that I've discussed only Venezuela on Colombia Calling, because it is so important to Colombia as a country,
yes,
you know.
Of
so
course.
It's our, one of our neighbours, you
it
know.
Is.
And everything that happens there has a knock-on effect here.
Yeah.
And the issue of all of the Venezuelans coming across who can and buying up property here and going to the university has created a weird economic situation.
Yeah, no, sure.
I think, you know, and you know, to write about it's fascinating, and to study it's fascinating. But of course, we're foreigners, and at the end of it, we've got the you know, option of leaving.
Sure.
That's the truth, and
yeah,
that's
no,
the,
that is the truth.
Just, you know, if it all goes to pot,
you've got to get out of jail free.
Yeah, so you know, we sort of go, oh, you know, well, yeah, Venezuela. But it's so fascinating. It's so peculiar,
it is
really,
very
what's
peculiar.
Going on.
No, I agree with you there.
Well, let me take this moment and just say thank you to Charlotte.
Thank
you know,
you.
We've come to the end. We've come to the end of this chat. It's been really informative. I hope that you out there have enjoyed the show. We've talked about Colombia's party spirit, but a little more of the academic side of it, which I think is very interesting indeed. And there's sort of, and then of course we've touched on, you know, the contemporary right now at the end here, talking about Venezuela and a bit of business news. America. So if you want to see, if you want to see Charlotte's writing, you know, just Google Charlotte McKenzie, and
that's
I'm sure it.
It
will come up with Business News America.
Pop up on the scary internet. There we go.
You can't hide yourself.
No, you
anymore,
can't hide yourself.
So
sadly,
I don't trust anyone who hasn't got an internet footprint.
Oh really?
Everyone has to have an internet footprint some way. You've just got to have something there. Even my grandfather's listed, you know, something, but it's way back. Anyway, no, I'm digressing. Anyway, it's been a fascinating chat. I'd like to say thank you and all the best
thank
in your
you.
Future endeavours.
Thanks very much.
And I'm sure you'll go from strength to strength with this Business News Americas and from there on to other great things. And the petrol issues and the gasoline issues
indeed.
And the gasoline are going to continue.
They will.
So
I think
we know you have plenty of work.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. If you want to get in touch, that's columbiacalling@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, all of the necessary social media evils. And, of course, you can email us at Columbia Calling. I said that already, columbiacalling@gmail.com. And our website, columbiacallingradio.com. Thank you for listening. Tune in next week. We'll have another great interviewee on the show. And don't go away.